Grab your Bibles and please keep Genesis 16 open. I'm a man of my word. Have you ever said that? Or if you're honestly, no. I'm a woman of my word. Have you ever said that to people? I'm a man of my word. I'm a woman of my word. When I make a promise, I keep my word. I keep my promise. Are you the kind of person who, when you say you're going to do something, you're very quick to do it deliberately? Or that's just who you are? Or do you take a long time to keep your promise? That's the kind of setting of the story that we're looking at today. God has made these amazing promises to Abraham and to Sarai, who later get the names that we recognise, Abraham and Sarah. And so God has made them wonderful promises to do wonderful things for them. In Genesis 12, God says to Abraham, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." And God promises to give Abram and Sarai children, and through them God will bless the entire world. The entire world will be blessed through Abram and Sarai and their kids. But in the first line of the chapter that we're looking at today, we're shown that there's a problem. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. No children. Sarai is having to deal with a huge heartache of wanting children, but not being able to conceive. And it's been 10 years of that heartache. God has promised them kids, through whom he's going to bless the entire world. He's made these promises, but there's no sign of him following through. What has happened to God's promise? And so Abraham and Sarai take matters into their own hands. And that's what I want us to see first. What's happened to God's promise? They take it into their own hands. Verses 1 to 4. So let's look at verses 1 to 4 again. Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abraham, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Double-sided paper. That's clever, isn't it? Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. Now, so much about the story, I think, sounds foreign to us, doesn't it? It is not what we're used to at all. But actually, to arrange for your slave or your servant to have children back in those days, and then to adopt them as your own, was actually culturally a fairly normal thing to do. It's weird to us, wrong to us, it's very strange. But actually, culturally, that was a fairly normal thing to do. So you could ask, was it wrong? I think sometimes we maybe come to this passage and we think, like, actually, this is wrong. But we need to ask, don't we? Like, is this wrong? Like, what's going on here? It's like God has promised them children. Sarah thinks, well, I'm barren, so let's have children that way. What's the harm in that? And what's more, it seems to all go to plan, doesn't it? Abraham marries and sleeps with Hagar, And she conceives. It works. It worked. It's all going to plan. However, I think there are a number of clues throughout the story that show us that this was a wrong turn from Abraham and Sarai. I think the first sign that we see that it is a wrong turn is that actually the whole thing smells a bit of Genesis chapter 3 and the fall and Adam and Eve in the garden. That the language that is used is very similar when you put them next to each other. Eve took the fruit and ate it and gave it to her husband and he ate. Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave, Hagar, gave her to her husband. He slept with Hagar. She conceived. You see, it's quite subtle, isn't it? It's quite subtle, but I think it's deliberate that we're to see those comparisons. And as we watch Abraham and Sarai's plan unfold, we're made to think of an earlier time when God's people chose not to trust God's words and actually to do their own thing instead. So this was definitely a wrong turn from Abraham and Sarai. 10 years is a really long time to wait for something. But when God makes a promise to someone, he keeps his promise. And here we get a glimpse of Abraham and Sarai's lack of trust in God, their lack of patience in his plans, in his promises. He made a promise, but they want to go about it on their own schedule, on their own time. And this is Abraham, remember. Abraham, like the model of faith in the Bible. But not here, though. He lets aside down here. But in this story, we see God's kindness to them, his kindness to Hagar, his faithfulness to Abraham and Sarai, despite their distrust, and despite the mess that follows. And it is a mess. That's what we see next. What follows is a mess. Verses 4 to 6. A third sign, or a second sign, that their plan was the wrong turn is the mess that follows and the damage to their relationships. Let's read on. When she, Hagar, knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abraham, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now she knows she's pregnant. She despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your slave is in your hands," Abraham said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, and she fled from her. Oh, it's a mess, isn't it? When Hagar finds out she's pregnant, she despises Sarai. That's such a strong word, isn't it? But in what could be such a short time, Hagar is able to do for Abraham what Sarai never could. Maybe she gloated. Maybe she sneered. Maybe she acted like the slave had become the mistress. Sarai is hurt and bitter and upset, and she blames Abraham. She says, "You are responsible for this, Abraham," even though it was her idea in the first place. And we see this conflict between husband and wife. Like, doesn't it make you think of Genesis 3 again? Adam and Eve blaming each other. "It was the woman that you put here with me." Adam and Eve blaming each other, Abraham and Sarai blaming each other, this conflict. And when Sarai says that something must be done about this, Abraham just seems to stand idly by. Abraham is passive. Again, instead of making peace, instead of protecting those he loves, he's acting like Adam in Genesis 3 again. And Sarai mistreats Hagar. We don't know how, but we know how bitter the conflict between them must have been at this point, how deep their emotions ran. And Sarai's treatment of Hagar is so bad that Hagar runs away into the desert. She flees into the desert. When God makes a promise, he always keeps his word. But see the mess that is caused when God makes a promise. and his people go about it their own way. Abraham and Sarai wanted what God promised them. It wasn't like a point-blank refusal to accept what God had said to them. They believed him. They wanted what was promised them. But when it looked like the promise was slow in coming, they tried to go about it their own way. And the result was damage. Damage everywhere. Mess. Broken relationships. God's will must be done God's way. And even though there is this mess, broken relationships, damage, we are shown a glimpse into the heart of God, our God. God is kind to Hagar in verses 7 to 12. Let's read those. Let's look at verses 7. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from? Where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery." Let's think about Hagar for a minute. Hagar is a bit of a victim, isn't she? She's handed between Abraham and Sarai like an inanimate object, used as the carrier of Abraham's child, nothing more. Mistreated by Sarai, mistreated by those who should have protected her, who claim to know the living God. She's been treated poorly. And yet she was also guilty too, wasn't she? She despised Sarai, lauded her pregnancy over those whom God had chosen. But here she is in the desert. She is in the desert. Like literally, emotionally, spiritually, she's in the desert. And God sees her in the desert, hears her in her misery, and he speaks to her. And the kindness that God shows her is extravagant, isn't it? He promises her children, like too many descendants to count. It's like, "Hagar, you wouldn't believe how many children, how many descendants I'm going to give you." I want us to think about the way that God treats Hagar. Hagar is an outsider. She's nobody, really. But God sees her. He hears her misery. He comes to her, blesses her, has mercy on her, lavishes his extravagant kindness and love on her. He didn't have to do that. But he shows her mercy and kindness because he loves to do that. God loves to do that. And maybe you're here today and your idea of God and what he's like is mostly based on what you imagine him to be. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're not quite sure what God is like. But here we are shown what God is like. God is full of kindness. He is extravagantly kind to Hagar. And I want us to think about the way that God treats us. Because God treats us with extravagant kindness. Coming to earth as a human being, coming into the world to be killed and raised to life again so that all who trust in him would be forgiven for their wrongdoing and brought into his family. Blessed. Hugely. Extravagantly. That is amazing. God is so kind. He shows mercy and kindness and love to us. Not because we deserve it. We're nobody really. We're just in the desert somewhere. Not because we deserve it, but because he loves to pour out his overflowing love and kindness. So Hagar is promised a child, lots of children. She's promised a child, but did you notice anything about this child that's promised? Compare the promise that God makes about Abraham's descendants in Genesis 12 that we looked at the beginning. compare that to the promise given here about Ishmael in verses 11 and 12. They are very, very different. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone. Everyone's hand will be against him. He will live in hostility towards all his brothers. In chapter 12, God says that he will bless the whole world through Abraham's child. But what God says here in this passage just doesn't match up at all. Ishmael will be a wild donkey of a man. Picture for a minute, a wild donkey. You don't get many of those in Yule. Well, I don't know, maybe you do. I don't live it. Imagine a wild donkey. Now, this isn't about stubbornness or stupidity. I don't think that's what we're meant to see here. But Ishmael will be this wild donkey, this wanderer in the desert, this lone figure. And did you notice that he will be against everyone else? Everyone else will be against him. Ishmael won't bring blessing. Ishmael will bring hostility. And so I think we're meant to make the connection that Ishmael is not, he is not the promised blessing-bringing child. Do you notice that? Very different to what God said before about Abraham's descendants, that they would bless the whole world. And so lastly, we see that a child is born, but it's not the child God promised. And that is in verses 11 to 16. Hagar obeys God and goes back to Abraham and Sarai, probably humbled, possibly reluctantly, but she goes back. And let's read verses 15 and 16, just the last couple of verses. So Hagar bore Abraham a son, and Abraham gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. At the beginning of the chapter, God's promises are taking ages, so Sarai started by hatching her own plan, a plan to build her family through Hagar. Those are the words she used. But did it work? Compare verse 2 of our chapter with the last couple of verses here. Sarai's plan failed, didn't it? Where's Sarai in verses 15 and 16? See how many times we're told that Abraham and Hagar's, that this is Abraham and Hagar's baby, Ishmael, not Sarai's. So Hagar bore Abraham a son, and Abraham gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. That, where's Sarai? She's not in the picture at all. Turn with me, well, it's just on the next page, isn't it? Chapter 17. Let's look at chapter 17 and let's read from verse 15. God also said to Abraham, he's got a new name now, Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you're no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I will surely bless him. I will make him fruitful and will greatly increase his numbers. He will be the father of 12 rulers, and I'll make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. And we'll stop there. This was God's plan all along. When God makes a promise, he keeps it. God always delivers on the promises that he makes. And this story isn't the first time that Abraham and Sarai mess up. And it isn't the last time that we see that. But because of God's kindness, because of the promises he made to them, he still provides them with children, with descendants, through whom he's going to bless the whole world. Because as Abraham had baby Isaac, and Isaac had Jacob, and Jacob had kids, and they had kids, and they had kids, and they had kids, eventually along comes Jesus Christ, God in human form. And through Jesus, God extends an invitation to you, to all of us, to the people that we meet on the street in Cheam, to everyone. An invitation that by trusting him, we can be forgiven, reconciled to God, and brought into his family. That is what he has done for you, if you are a Christian today. One of the reasons that we get together like this is so that we can celebrate that God has shown this extravagant kindness to us, blessing us. And all that is true because God has been faithful to his promises to Abraham and Sarai. Even though they tried to jump the gun, when it looked like God wasn't going to keep his promise, God was faithful to his promise. Despite Abraham and Sarai's lack of trust in God's promise and the mess that follows, God shows kindness to them all.